Okay, so let's start. So you have a handout. I think I want to start with a quick review of last time. And again, last time was a bit messy, so hopefully the review will clean it up, and then I'll have a messy second half to be cleaned up the following Wednesday. Okay? So, first of all, I remind you that we are under the wishful thinking hypothesis, or maybe the no anomalies hypothesis, as other people call it, or no hidden faces hypothesis, and it's somewhat false, okay? But on the other hand, it's also somewhat almost right, so it's worth talking about it, okay? And anyway, the hypothesis is that as phrased, it's clearly wrong, okay? So the hypothesis is that the boundary of configuration space is only made of the pieces in which two clusters coincide, okay? In which two, when you take a boundary, you only need to worry about the collapse of two things. Okay? And these are the principal faces. A more correct formulation would be that the configuration space integrals vanish on configurations in which more than two things coincide. Okay? That would be equally good. But even that is false. But still, we're under this hypothesis, okay? So then, under this hypothesis, the following diagram commutes, okay? So the bottom line, or if you wish, the integration over configuration space map defines a morphism between two chain complexes. The bottom one is sort of non-space cohomology. So you let gamma be the space of all smooth embeddings of S1 into R3. And then you look at its Derham complex. So for that, you either have to discuss a little bit how to do Derham complexes on infinite dimensional spaces, or just restrict yourself to any finite dimensional subspace. So take any manifold of knots, so any manifold that parameterizes knots, and replace gamma by that manifold. Okay, and it for the purpose of what we do, it doesn't matter. Okay, and then the upper space, the graph complex, or the graph cohomology complex, deserves more description, and we did it last time, and I'll do it again. So D, and it has an upper bar on it for reasons which may be clear later, and it has two indices. One is the type, which corresponds to the finite type degree, and it roughly measures the complexity of the graph, and the other is M, which is the homological degree, the same M as here. And that complex is the span of diagrams like this one, which are, which have a circle skeleton, an oriented circle as a skeleton. They are connected. And then it has some graph inside the skeleton. Of course, inside doesn't mean anything because this is combinatorics. So, I mean, I'm just conventionally drawing it inside the skeleton, but it could be equally well outside. And the graph doesn't have to be trivalent. It could be higher valency. But in this picture, I marked the vertices with bullets and the non-vertices with just lines passing each other. Okay? So these are not vertices, the lines here. The graph is not planar. Okay? And then, the small print. So the way you read the degree, the homological degree out of a diagram D, is you look at all the vertices, and you count how much it is more than trivalent. So sort of you add one to the homological degree for each vertex, which is more than trivalent. So here we have one quadrivalent, two quadrivalent vertices, so this would be of a degree two, homological degree two graph. Okay? Next, oops, what have I done? Next, the degree is just the Euler characteristic, or maybe negative the Euler characteristic, and it is preserved under the differential, so it remains makes it still makes sense. Now, the graphs actually should have directed internal edges, even though in the picture I didn't show it, but really each internal edge should have had an arrow on it. But it's modulo the convention that if you flip the direction of the arrow, you flip the sign of the diagram. So I'm looking at linear combinations of diagrams, so it makes sense to flip the sign. Furthermore, the set of vertices is ordered, and I'm using the alternating representation on those. So if you change the ordering, you may change sign depending on the sign of the permutation that you use. And then two further things, double internal vertices are allowed, so things like this are legal. However, no bubbles. So you don't have vertices that start, sorry, you don't have edges that start and end in the same vertex. Okay? Well, I'm claiming that it's a complex. So far, I've only defined the chain spaces. Now I need to define the differential. The differential of a diagram D is the sum over all ways of choosing an edge of the diagram, and it could be either an internal edge or a skeleton edge, but not a chord. So not an internal edge that begins and ends on the skeleton. Okay? And also not edges that are part of a double. And I'll have to explain that in a few minutes. Okay? And then for each edge, for each such E that you choose, you look at the diagram that you get by contracting this edge to a point. So here is the definition of what it means to contract an edge to the point. It means, well, the edge will connect two vertices. After contraction, the edge will disappear and the two vertices will be merged. So if that had three extra lines coming out of it, and this one had two extra lines coming out of it, afterwards you'll have five extra lines coming out of it. You are welcome to verify that this operation adds 1 to M and does not change N. Okay? But there are signs. Yeah?
So the edges on the skeleton is allowed, right?
Edges on the skeleton may be contracted, yes.
Okay.
But not chords. Okay?
Right. So, okay.
So, okay. But so far I'm stating the theorem. So, I mean, and last time I sort of derived it. But sort of in the statement I don't owe you an explanation of anything. Only once I finish stating it I have to explain why everything actually works out. Now, but there are signs, and the signs are determined as follows. So, when you have a list of things, there is actually a signed way of removing an element from it, and also a signed way of adding an element to it. So, and the convention is that the signed way of removing an element is you first permute the list. So this is actually, I mean, when you have an oriented list modulo the alternating permutation. So you first permute the list so that the thing you want to remove is the first element in it, then you remove it. And likewise, to add, you add stuff at the beginning of the list, as the first element in the list. So if you have an edge, remember it's an oriented edge, it's going from V0 to V1, then I first do a signed remove for V0, then I do a signed remove for V1, and then if I call the new vertex V, I do a signed insert of V to the list. By the way, in ordinary linear algebra, if you're familiar with exterior algebra, signed remove is interior multiplication, right? So if you have a K form, you can interior multiply it by a vector, okay? That will mean inserting the vector as the first argument, and then looking at the form that you will have left. But in practice, it means that if you do internal multiply by basis vector E J to a form D X I 1 wedge D X I 2 wedge so on up to D X I K. What happens if you feed EJ as the first thing? I mean, in general, the way you feed lots of vectors into a form is by permuting them in, feeding them into each of the DXs with all permutations. But if you feed EJ into the first one, the only permutations that will contribute are those in which the DXJ, which will be somewhere in the middle, gets permuted to be first. And then it will be eaten up. So basically, you permute stuff into the beginning, and then you look at the form that remains. So this signed remove is what you would call interior multiplication, and the signed insert is what you would call exterior multiplication by an additional dx. Okay. And finally, to complete the description, I have to tell you what the map from diagrams to the rank homology is, and we talked about it. So basically, over the space of knots, there is a bundle whose fiber, so for any specific diagram, there is a bundle whose fiber is the configuration space corresponding to that diagram. Also, there is a map into S2 raised to the power of interior edges. This is the map that maps every edge to the direction of sight on that edge. So you take the volume form on S2, raise it to the number of interior edges, pull it back via this direction of U map, you get the form on T, and then you push it forward using pi. And last time we verified that it will map the degree M piece here to the form degree M piece over here. Okay? And then the claim is that, so now it's time to actually prove the theorem, or at least review the rationale behind the theorem. So basically, all I have to show is that, D commutes with I, but computing I and then computing D, so computing D of a push forward is, well, by Stokes' theorem, is the same as, oh, so how did it go? D of push forward is equal to push forward of D minus push forward using the boundary of configuration of the fiber. So push forward of D vanishes because the forms we're pushing forward are closed because, they're pullback of top forms. You cannot differentiate them anymore. Okay? And so the moral is that D, okay, pushing forward and then D is the same as pushing forward along the boundary of configuration space. So all I have to explain is why does D describe, why does this D, the graph D, describe the boundary of configuration space. But this is exactly wishful thinking. This is exactly the wishful thinking statement. That the boundary is made only by having two points collapse like here. Okay? Now, but then I still have to say a few things. First of all, signs work out. So everything should be oriented, all the signs should match. It's hell, I don't think I want to do it. Okay? In fact, the only one thing that may be worthy of doing is just the fact that d squared is equal to zero, that the combinatorial d squared is equal to zero. So basically you have to check that, well, if instead of contracting one edge, if you look at the sum of all ways of contracting two edges, you get zero. But then it's the usual thing. So basically, if you're going to contract two edges, it's not going to matter in which order you contract them, except for the sign. Okay? And the reason the sign matters is because of the anti-symmetry of inserting new edges. Okay, the exterior multiplication. Sorry, inserting new vertices. Okay, so signs work out. Second, chords work out. So you see, in the definition of the differential, where was the definition of the differential? I've excluded chords. And why did I allow myself to exclude chords? Because I am, well, I mean, in the definition of the configuration space, I'm restricting my attention to configurations in which the points on the knot are cyclically ordered as shown, okay, as the diagram dictates. But then if you have a chord, these two points can never coincide. Okay? Because they correspond to different points on the knot. And then the last point to note is that, well, you see, double internal edges are allowed. So why can't I not contract one of a pair or a multiple inside a collection of multiple edges? So why does the piece of the boundary of configuration space that corresponds to contracting, say even I have a triple edge, that corresponds to contracting this, contributes nothing? Okay? And the answer is that, well, in fact, the configuration space integral that corresponds to contracting, sorry, that corresponds to this diagram is a priori zero. So diagrams that have double or multiple internal edges, in fact, do not contribute to the configuration space. So the reason I've allowed them is because they can appear following contractions. Okay, so if I had excluded them, I had to explain, I would have had to explain why, you know, why I'm allowing myself to exclude contractions that lead to double edges. But instead I've chosen to exclude bubbles, And now I'm explaining why I can allow myself to exclude contractions that lead to bubbles. Okay? So, why is it that diagrams like this contribute nothing? Because over here, well, in a diagram like this, you will be using the same direction of view map twice. Okay? So, you will be getting a map from the configuration space or the total space into, or a part of the picture will involve a map into S2 cross S2. Right, I'm only looking at the part that corresponds to, I suppose, the two edges that appear inside a pair, or maybe it's three and then the three edges that appear within a triple. So, right, the part of the direction of view map that corresponds to these two edges will be a map from T into S2 cross S2, but it actually factors through a single copy of S2, where this is the diagonal inclusion. Okay? And then you'll want to take omega cross omega and pull it back to here. But since the map factors, you could have pulled it back from here. But here you are pulling it back through a space of lower dimension, so it vanishes. Okay? So such things are allowed to make the technicalities, to make it easier to state what contractions I'm allowing, but their contribution is zero. Okay? And basically this is all I have to say. I mean, this is the theorem. Now, the theorem is false. I will have to go, it's a wishful thinking theorem. Okay, so it's not a theorem. I will have to go through it later and check what happens with the other boundaries, okay? But even before, I want to tell you what I would do with this theorem if it was true, because it turns out to be close enough to true, okay? So what would I do with this theorem if it was true, and now we are done with the handout, and we're doing something else. So in particular, we have, maybe I'll at least display the theorem. So let's restrict our attention to the case m is equal to 0. At m equal to 0, we will have a collection of map I sub n, one for each degree n, and they all will be going from, they will be going from d0 to omega 0, but since it commutes with the differential, they will all be going from h0, the zeroth homology of dn, into the zeroth homology of gamma. But what is the zeroth homology of gamma? So these will be functions. So basically, this is omega 0 of gamma modulo the differential of, no, sorry, No, it's the kernel of D. So it's the kernel of D, which goes from omega 0 of gamma into omega 1 of gamma. Now, so these are functions on the space of knots whose differential is equal to 0, meaning they're constants. So a different name for that will be knot invariants. Okay? So basically, for each class in H0, you will be getting a knot invariant. Now, by the way, if we had restricted our attention to gamma being some finite dimensional subset, it would still be just as good. In fact, it's enough that I restrict my attention to gamma being an interval. Because really what I get here is, so first of all, for every point, I get a number, right? Well, just for any specific knot, I sub n with that specific knot, I mean, given a class here, will give you a number. And furthermore, if you have a path in the space of knots, and a path in the space of knots is a completely finite dimensional object, okay? Then you will get an element in H0 of that path, which amounts to, say, a function on the path. So an assignment of a number to each knot along the path, which is constant, whose differential is equal to 0. So basically, again, it's a knot invariant. Okay? So anyway, so the next thing I want to do is to, well, pack all of these invariants together and see if I can understand what I get. Okay? So let Z0, you remember at some point we had Z minus 1, now it's getting better. So Z0 will be the sum of all of the invariants that you can get this way. Namely, it's the sum over n of all the adjoints of I sub n. Now, what is the adjoint of I sub n? I sub n goes from here to here. The adjoint will go from the dual of knot invariants to the dual of graph cohomology. So it will go from the space of all knots into, since I've summed, it will be the sum of all of the duals of Z's over all n's. So the sum as n is greater than or equal to 0, and I'm actually allowing infinite sums, of H0 of graph cohomology dual. Okay? So the next thing I want to understand is, well, what is the target space? Right, this is, I just told you that I get a huge family of invariants, and I want to understand what is the target space. So, what is H0 of D? So, I'm neglecting to specify N, okay? Maybe I will put N, okay? But I'll forget it later, okay? So what is the dual of that? Well, it's the H0 is the kernel of D, right? So it's the kernel of D dual, and in general, the dual of a kernel is the dual space modded out by the image of the adjoint. Sorry, so this is standard linear algebra, okay? So this is equal to D0, the graphs of degree, of homological degree 0, I suppose I've put a bar on top, take the dual of that, and then mod out by the image of the adjoint of D. But the adjoint of D, well, D is a map that goes from D0 to D1, so the adjoint of D will go from D1 dual into D0 dual. Okay?
George,
yes?
Do you want bars in those curly D's as well, or no?
Yes, I do. Here, you
mean? And one...
Oh, everywhere, sorry. Yeah, everywhere there is a bar. Though it's really not too important. You'll see in a minute. You'll see in a minute also why I've put it there. So let's try to understand this, first of all, naively. Okay? Naively is with an E or without an E? I'm not sure. So, is it? Anybody knows? Okay. So first of all, D is a space spanned by diagrams with no relations. Or maybe the only relations are signs. Okay? So basically it has a specified list of basis vectors. The basis vectors are the diagrams. Okay? So its dual is itself. Okay? So I could just say that the dual of this, well, I will denote it by the upper zero, but it's the lower zero, but it's the same. Okay? And then let's mod it out by the image of the adjoint, and again, it's just going from D1 into D0. Yeah?
Well, why are the spaces the same? It's infinite-dimensional space.
No, I'm specifying N. For a specific N...
N is also fixed in this formula.
Yeah, N is... I'm fixing N throughout. Right, I'm essentially studying one of those N, one of those dual spaces for one specific N, and then I said I'll drop N in the notation. So I really, it's everywhere there is an N. And I suppose since I've switched the sides of the indices, I should put the N on the other side. But everything is happening for a specific complexity. And then I sum over all possible complexities. Okay? But at any specific complexity, there are only finitely many diagrams. So I want to understand this. Okay? Now, naively, or even more naively, what is the adjoint of contracting an edge? So, let's think about it this way. Right, this is supposed to be, the adjoint of contracting an edge. D is contracting an edge, so I'm thinking about what's the adjoint of that. So, how should I say that? Okay, let's, you know what, let's just do an example. Okay, so let's compute D adjoint of, well, maybe I'll still call it D adjoint naive, of a diagram like this one. Okay, so this is an example of a diagram of homological degree 1 because it has one quadrivalent vertex and the rest are trivalent. Okay? So how do I figure out what it is? Well, I know that its pairing with each diagram. So basically, if I put here a diagram of degree zero, the pairing of this with the pairing of this with that should be, well, this is the definition of adjoint, should be the pairing of this with D of that. Okay? Now, D of that is the sum of all ways of contracting an edge, and then the question becomes, how do you contract an edge in a diagram of degree zero so as to get a single quadrivalent, to get the quadrivalent vertex placed here? Okay? And the answer is, the sum of all ways, the diagrams that will have contractions that have a quadrivalent vertex that look like this are all the diagrams that you can get by expanding the quadrivalent, by uncontracting the quadrivalent vertex, by breaking the quadrivalent vertex into two trivalent vertices. Okay? So, in fact, the double dual twice naive, sorry, D adjoint twice naive of, and I'll explain this in a minute, of this should be the sum of the three ways of opening up the quadrivalent vertex to a union, to a pair of trivalent vertices connected. So it should be this plus plus or minus that. Okay? But in fact, this is twice naive, because really, what is the pairing of this diagram with D of that? Well, there are three ways you could contract this diagram to get that one, right? Any edge contracted here will give this. So in fact, this pairing is equal to 3. Okay? So in fact, the naive D, as defined here, of this diagram will be plus or minus 3 times the Y diagram. Plus or minus, well, likewise, if you look at this diagram, there are two ways to contract an edge on it to get this diagram. Namely, you could contract here or you could contract here. So plus or minus twice times this diagram. And finally, for this diagram, there are 4 ways to contract an edge on it to get to get this. So really you'll get plus or minus 4 times this. Okay? So I was actually happy about this. So this was good because it looks very much like the STU relation, and I want to mod out by the image of this star. So, and I want it to look like the things I'm expecting from finite type invariants. So I was happy about being twice naive. Are we out of time? No. But I'm quite unhappy about being naive just once. Okay? So, the trick is to use, so the trick to make the twice naive thing correct is to use a different inner product with respect to which you will compute this duality. Okay? So, let me explain. So, let me define, so, okay, so kind of all of this is kind of and even that is kind of preparatory work, trying to explain why I'm doing what I'm doing. And now, here's what I do. So, I will define D lower bar M to be, well, it will be D upper bar M dual, of course there should be an index N as well, but I'm skipping it. And set theoretically, so this is set theoretically, it's in fact the exact same set as D upper bar dual. Okay? Except that I'm using a different duality. Namely, if you have an element of D upper, sorry, if you have an element D which belongs to D upper bar, and you want to pair it with an element D prime, but I'll mark a bar underneath it to indicate that it belongs to this space, to the dual. Okay? And I want to indicate to pair it with the lower bar, instead of just using the obvious pairing, meaning the delta function of D and D prime, right? When I said that the dual of a space spanned by diagram is itself, I really meant that the pairing of this with that would be the delta function. So instead of using the delta function, I will multiply it by the order of the automorphism group of D. Or D prime, I mean, they're the same. Okay? And let's see what it does. Okay? So now, I suppose I can remove this. And now, let's see what is D dual applied to a diagram, to this diagram, when it is considered as an element of the dual space. Okay, which is where it should be living. So, let's pair this with the diagram, this diagram considered as the element, as an element of the original space. Okay, and you know what? Maybe I should have first stated the claim. So, okay. Eva, can I remove this blackboard? Okay, sorry. So, maybe I should first have stated the claim. So, claim. For D bar in D lower bar, so for D lower bar in D lower bar, the adjoint of the differential applied to D bar is equal to the naive sum, the simple-minded sum of all ways of breaking a high valency vertex in two with no coefficients. Okay? Indeed, let's verify that, or let's verify it on the three examples that we already had. So, assuming the claim, so D, the sum of all ways of breaking up this diagram will include in it the Y diagram exactly once. The inner product of the Y diagram with this Y diagram is the order of the automorphism group, which is 3. So you get here 3, which is indeed what you get when you compute the inner product of this with D of that. Right? Because D of that gives this 3 times. Likewise, I don't know, let's do it on yet another example. So the inner product of D star of, again, the same diagram with this diagram. So again, the sum of all ways of opening up this vertex will include the X diagram once, but the inner product of the X diagram, if the X diagram is 4, because the X diagram has symmetry group of order 4, so this is equal to 4, and 4 is also the inner product of this with D of that, because there are 4 different ways of contracting this diagram to get that diagram. Okay? So the claim is that this persists, and therefore, okay, so what is this now? It's, well, I suppose this is, well, I guess, the line that I'm continuing is this one. So what is H0DN dual? So this is therefore equal to, so this is the set of all trivalent diagrams with a circle skeleton, and the image of this star will come from all ways of taking a quadrivalent vertex, a diagram with a single quadrivalent vertex, and exploding it in all possible ways. If that quadrivalent vertex is on the skeleton, you will be getting STU relations. If it is on inside, you will be getting IHX relations. Right? IHX relations are all ways of exploding an interior quadrivalent vertex. So the conclusion is that this is a trivalent diagrams, modulo, STU, and IHX, which is the same as the space we called A when we were talking, or really I think it's A sub N, when we were talking about knot theory, when it was Monday. Okay? Now, lots of things remain to check, especially signs. So, this is assuming all signs work out. Okay? So I'll say something about signs and next time, but that's what we have for now. Okay.